Parenting a child with ADHD can be stressful. Chad's here to help. Parent-to-parent training courses offered by Chad are designed to fit easily into your already busy schedule. Get the training you need online, on demand, or in your community. Learn from parents who have experienced the same challenges as you. Topics include managing ADHD, proven parenting strategies, and educational rights for your child with ADHD. Register today, chad.org/parents. Chad members eligible for special member pricing. Click, join, get involved.
This is Attention Talk Radio, your ADHD information station, part of Attention Talk Network. Its sister stations include Attention Talk Video, your ADHD talk show station, our subscription-based newsletter, Attention Talk News, your ADHD news source. Each media channel can be accessed at their respective URLs, attentiontalkradio.com, attentiontalkvideo.com, and attentiontalknews.com. Keep up with all the media channels on our Facebook page, found at facebook.com/attentiontalkradio.
Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to attention, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I am your guest host, ADHD Coach Caroline McGuire, and we have a great show for you tonight. Our title is ADHD Kids, Bullying, What's a Parent to Do? And with us in our virtual studio is Dr. Kirsten Milliken. Tonight is March 9th, 2016 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And before we get into the meat of the show, we have a few announcements. Dr. Barkley has asked us to promote ADHDfund.com, a crowdsourcing website to raise money for small-scale research worldwide. The Attention Talk Network has over 450 interviews and more than 210 hours of programming, which is overwhelming to think about. That is why I've made a list of my top 10 favorite Attention Talk interviews. Download the list at www.digcoaching.com/ATR. This year's International ADHD Professionals Conference, hosted by the ADHD Coaches Organization, is being held in Reston, Virginia on April 28th to May 1st. I will be there. If you are a professional who wants to learn coaching skills to use with your clients, needs tools to build your business, or are a member of the public who would like to attend our open house, go to www.ADHDprofessionalsconference.com to register for the International ADHD Professionals Conference today. I think that's the end of our announcement, so let's get into the meat of the show. Again, with us in our virtual studio is Dr. Kirsten Milliken. Dr. Kirsten Milliken is an ADHD coach and clinical psychologist. She's a dynamic and energetic individual who thrives on diverse experiences. She has worked for several years as a staff psychologist with the NYPD, and her job often found her speeding down the highway with sirens in the middle of the night to deal with a crisis involved with police officers. She is one of the leading authorities on play and often talks about this topic. And this is one of the reasons we are having her on today. Welcome, Dr. Kirsten Milliken.
Hey, Miss Caroline, how are you?
I'm wonderful. So glad to have you on. So we had talked, you and I both share a passion for play and a passion for the topic of play. And I have this idea for a show about bullying because it so often comes up, and there's sort of these two kinds of bullying, and we all remember this maybe from childhood or we've heard it from our children, which is sort of the overt and the covert. You know, the overt being that, you know, I throw your hat out the window of the bus or I put you in a locker, and the covert being much more subtle. much more about looks and innuendo and tone and sneering and that kind of thing. And what you and I were talking about in prep for this show is really that often parents are going over and over again to the administration, and I'm not saying they shouldn't do that, but that the answer or one of the solutions is actually in social skills and play. Can you tell me a little bit about why that is?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, you know that a lot of times the kids who are bullying have learning disabilities themselves. And so, you know, they're not developing at the same rate as their typical peers. Oftentimes they're getting in trouble, especially when they're involved in more overt bullying behavior. So they're getting held back from interacting with their peers and being punished rather than being taught skills. Oftentimes also they're losing out on appropriate play time, and play is a big part in learning social skills. It's part of how we learn to interact with each other, both as kids and on into adulthood. So play is a huge part in how to deal with all of this, and I think that it needs to happen in every setting. So that the kids who are being bullied and also who are doing the bullying are learning more appropriate skills and finding some common ground.
So that's an interesting comment, that play is how people learn skills or social skills. And that's not something I think everybody's fully aware of. I think sometimes people think, you know, it's just something little kids do and that kind of thing. But can you tell us more about, like, the benefits of play?
Absolutely. So play, I mean, we all know that play helps us to, you know, be more physically active and healthy, but it also helps us to learn how to manage ourselves. So how to exert impulse control, how to learn to play within play within a set of rules and boundaries. And so play is something that we enjoy. And when we're engaged in it, we want to keep it going. And so in order to do that, you have to get along with the other people that you're playing with, right? So if you think about playing a game of cards, if you and I were playing a game of cards and you were an ace card player and I really sucked at playing cards, after a while, if you were playing at your best, I wouldn't be having any fun. And I'd probably say, you know, I really don't want to do this anymore. So, but if you really like playing cards and you really want to play with, you know, something with me, you might kind of tone it down a little bit. You might even, you know, let me win once in a while, or let me get close, or encourage me, so that you're adjusting the rules for how you play yourself, and you're doing what it takes to perpetuate the play continuing, right? So that's really a great example of effective social skills, right? Taking into consideration what it takes to keep engaging in an activity and also being empathetic about how the other person might react if you're always winning. There are many more examples of that, but I mean, kids enjoy playing, and if they learn appropriate skills, then they can engage in that, have a good time, and they can keep it going without the interference of adults. So there's some benefit to learning those skills, to developing that mindset around rules and around self-management so that they can have fun.
I love it. So, and one of the things, first of all, I would never beat you at cards, so don't worry about that at all. But, you know, one of the things you're talking about, a fellow called Jed Baker calls being a good winner, being a good loser, which is that, you know, you're adjusting the fact that you're winning cards because it makes me feel bad, and I'm adjusting how I react because I know that I need to be good at losing.
Right.
But the other thing you said that I thought was just phenomenal was that, you know, it's something that teaches you and you adjust your behavior, which is a problem, you know, where kids need to learn how to adjust their behavior, and that the play is the way that they can actually learn those skills But what do you say to parents who say, well, you know, the school needs to do something? I mean, what I hear you saying is that the kids need those skills.
I mean, really what I think is that it's every adult's responsibility to make sure that kids are engaging in cooperative, playful activities. Not just parents, not just teachers. And, you know, we all know that it's been talked about widely, but in years recently, a lot of playful activities are being taken out of the school settings in favor of loading kids up even from a young age with more academics so that they're meeting academic standards. And really what's happening is that they're being misguided because kids, especially in elementary school, and you know, even as they get older, really get a lot of benefit from engaging in playful activities. Again, it helps them to learn self-regulation. It helps them develop the executive skills that have to do with planning and organization, you know, self-management, and social skills. So really, they're almost shooting themselves in the foot by taking away what seems, you know, what they think is this frivolous free time or play time that really is so important to any kid's development, both academically, socially, physically, emotionally, in all these ways.
So the other thing I hear you say, and I think is interesting, is that not only are we sort of systemically taking away the play, but, you know, what I've found, Kirsten, is that a lot of times kids who are left out don't have as many opportunities to play. You mentioned it about kids who are bullied or punished and they're kept, you know, in the class and they miss recess and then this just makes things worse. But I'm also thinking of the kids who are not as socially skilled, and maybe that's why they're being bullied. They sometimes just don't have as many opportunities. And what I'm hearing you say is this makes things worse.
Yeah, I do think, I mean, I think it's somewhat ironic that the kids who are bullied and the kids who are doing the bullying probably have a lot more in common than they realize. So I can tell you that there was an incident a few years ago with my son's classroom where the teacher was very old school, been teaching for a long time, and still believed that when kids didn't do their homework, or, you know, 100% of their homework, that they should be held inside from recess, not realizing that the kids who were not getting that stuff done had some learning issues. So, and then unfortunately, the other kids were teasing them, a form of bullying, because they weren't coming outside, because they weren't getting their homework done, and it was being pointed out in a somewhat public manner that these kids were not accomplishing everything that was expected of them. So, you know, there was a lot of bad behavior, a lot of people who were not playing well together, and then, of course, these kids who weren't accomplishing their work were not playing at all, which, again, kind of set them up to fail later in the day when they hadn't gotten some of that energy out, they hadn't been able to engage in some positive activities with their peers, that they had more trouble focusing and paying attention later in the day. So it kind of snowballs. And again, yes, it can be both in the kids who are being bullied and the kids who are doing the bullying.
That makes total sense to me because it's this common denominator of not having the opportunity to work out these skills because of sort of the restriction that adults are putting on it. We're going to have to go to a break, but when we come back, Kirsten, you were just talking also about a little bit more about how social skills develop, and I would love to talk about that because I think it's sort of a flip on things where we're saying to parents the answer isn't more rules. The answer is found within this skill building. So let's go to a break. I want to mention that Dr. Kirsten Milliken, who I have on today, has a new book out. It's called Play ADHD, Permission to Play, A Prescription for Adults with ADHD. Did I get that right?
You did. Awesome.
Yay. And you can get her book at Amazon or at playdhd.com, which is her website. We'll be right back. Thank you.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
The average annual cost of attending college starts around $25,000.
Students who have ADHD are at high risk of dropping out because they haven't learned the critical skills they need to succeed in school. Protect your investment with an EDGE Foundation coach, specifically trained to help students with ADHD and executive function challenge make the transition from high school to college. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more or call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE to get your free college success guide.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
If you think you understand attention so well, then why are you struggling so much with it? Attention is as simple as it is complex to understand. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. It's grossly misunderstood. Consider this. Focus on the wrong thing, get the wrong solution. In our new ebook, we'll share 5 key tips and insights on managing ADHD learned from conducting more than 300 interviews with attention experts. Download our ebook today at attentiontalknetwork.com and start understanding and managing your attention today.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Before we went to a break, we were talking with Dr. Kirsten Milliken about the fact that the bully and the bullied might have more in common than we think. And we're sort of presenting a little bit of a different take on things tonight because we're talking about this idea that the answer and to address a lot of ADHD kids do struggle with social skills. And there's different reasons why that we've talked about on this show before. But one of the things we're talking about tonight is that one of the answers is socialization and play to help kids with the skills they need. And so, Kirsten, you mentioned something to me when we talked about cooperative play in terms of these kinds of skill-building activities.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of times you know, the typical games that I know my kids are still playing in school are the dodgeball and, you know, the games that are more competitive, where there's a winner. You're playing against each other. And I don't know when you grew up, but I grew up in the 70s.
Me too.
There you go. And there was a group of play workers, a couple of who are friends of mine now, who developed what is called the new games. And new games were a form of cooperative play where people had to work together, and there was no win or lose. It really was about working together as a team to make decisions based on creative thinking and communication and collaboration. And so, you know, everybody walks away feeling good kind of thing. And so, you know, where failure within the game really was about, you know, the team taking whatever had happened, reevaluating, adjusting, things like that, and working things out to come to a solution to whatever the problem was of the game. So it really fostered more cooperation, more positive interactions, healthy communication, and it helped people and helped kids to develop better social skills. Because they were working together with each other, and they really had to both participate and count on the other teammates in order to be successful in whatever the problem was for the game. I don't know if you had this. I go to a camp every summer that has a class called The Joy of Play, and I went last summer, and he broke out the parachute. And it was like a flashback, right? Because this is what we were doing when all these new games were becoming popular. We would all stand around outside or in the gym with a parachute. And, you know, we would all throw the parachute up in the air. And we'd all go underneath and see what it was like to have the parachute coming down on us. Or we would have a ball and we'd try and get the ball to go around in a certain direction. But we all had to cooperate to get that to do that. Things like that. And then, you know, and taking other games like playing hide and seek, right? Now, usually the game of hide and seek is played where one person is it, and, you know, you don't want to be it. Being it is not a fun thing to do. But in new games, the person who's it is actually the one who goes and hides, and then everybody else has to try and find that person. But when somebody finds the person, they don't scream out, you know, ollie, ollie, oxen free or whatever. Instead, they hide with the person. So the ultimate end of the game is when everybody is hiding in the same place. So, you know, it's kind of silly, right? But it's much more cooperative and kind of funny. So looking to play games like that, another one is group juggling, right, where everybody stands in a circle and you try and get a pattern of juggling going among all the people in the circle. So, again, very cooperative, and you really have to pay attention to the other people in your group and also try and figure out the pattern with your hands and with your eyes and everything. So there's a lot going on there, developing skills socially, physically, mentally, and it's all play. But it's not this competitive type of play that really fosters more, you know, of the adversarial kind of feelings towards people and really leaves kids open to being bullied, feeling like, you know, they were the last one chosen, those kinds of things. And I really think Bernie DeCoven is one of the people that I talk to a lot. He's got a website called Fans of Fun, or Deep Fun, and he actually does workshops for adults. But in my opinion, I think we need to do the workshops for adults so that they can bring it back to the kids, so that they're encouraging kids, again, to engage in these more cooperative kinds of play and build their social skills along with all of their other executive skills at a much higher level.
So you said a bunch of things that I want to go back to, and I love it.
You said a lot.
At first, it makes me want to go to summer camp again. But one of the things, you know, I do feel like we should point out is that there are kids who intuitively just don't pick up the social skills. They don't. I was playing a game called Rumpelstiltskin with a group at a school recently, and I played it partly to figure out what kids can't really figure out those rules and don't pay attention and that kind of thing. And I was probably one of those kids once upon a time. But, you know, I think there's kids who don't, you know, you have to play the game and give them the, you know, point out what's going on and do the social skills
right.
training. But I also think what you're talking about is just this shift in mindset. And you mentioned something that, you know, about this cooperative play of people working together, and it reminded me just of a life skill, right? Because we all have to work together when we reach adulthood, and we in the school systems nowadays, they love projects, so everybody has to work together on the projects. And so what you're describing is to build the social awareness and the executive skills of these kids, both the bullied and the bullies, with this cooperative kind of play. And so my big question is, can parents do this?
Absolutely. There are tons of resources online. You know, I was thinking earlier about, you know, I don't know, I belonged to Girl Scouts when I was a kid, but all of those structured activities that happen outside of the school setting, a lot of times they're really engaging in more of this cooperative kinds of things. But parents can also be doing this, you know, whether you have a small family or a large family, if you live in a neighborhood where there are a lot of other kids, if you bring your child to the playground, you can certainly be leading some of these types of cooperative play games and modeling them, participating in them. It can really happen anywhere. And then, of course, the other thing is that especially when you have younger children, schools really encourage a lot of parental volunteers coming in. And so it might be something where, you know, if you know that there's an issue happening in your child's classroom, to volunteer to come in and lead a cooperative play activity, you know, most teachers are going to think that's a pretty benign thing to do. It's not like coming in and giving a lecture about bullying. So if you just volunteer to come in, you know, one day at recess and you want all the kids to come out and you're going to play a cooperative play game, and do that, you know, on a somewhat regular basis, that's a great opportunity for parents to be really participating in the education, helping with the development of the kids, with their executive and social skills, and, you know, kind of having an eyes on so that you can see what's going on in that school setting and where else, you know, either the parent might be of help or maybe the teacher needs some help.
Okay, that's a great point. And, you know, sort of when your kid is struggling, one of the first things everyone always says to do is to become involved and be a presence in the classroom.
Right.
And we're going to have to go to a break. But when we come back, I would love to talk a little more about this concept of building these skills and the modeling that you touched on. Dr. Kirsten Milliken has a new book out, Play DHD, Permission to Play, A Prescription for Adults with ADHD. As you can hear, she's very engaging on the subject. You can find her book at Amazon or at playdhd.com.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
You can't go off to college with them, but we can. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more how an EDGE coach can help your student reach their full potential. You can also call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE and get a free college success guide.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Focus on the wrong thing, get the wrong solution, misunderstand attention, and you'll struggle with it. Get 5 key tips and insights on managing ADHD learned from conducting more than 300 interviews with attention experts. Download the ebook today at attentiontalknetwork.com and start managing your attention today.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Dr. Kirsten Milliken, welcome back. Everyone, one of the reasons I wanted to do this show was that I think it's hard for parents, and I work with parents all the time, and they kind of don't know what to do. They're baffled, and you have this kid, and they're telling you, I don't want to take the bus, I don't want to eat lunch, you know, and it's really, really painful. And one of the things that I found over the years is that, you know, we learn a lot of things in life, and often we don't really learn how do you help someone with this social dilemma,
right.
Especially because sometimes it's for a short period of time. You know, it's the fourth grade, or it's a certain, you know, class, like you said, that doesn't really work for the kid. And with the, you know, the ADHD kids, often there's a lot going on for them, and they kind of have a struggle. And you mentioned something that I thought that would be good for parents to understand, which is like this concept of direct instruction and then this concept of modeling. Do you mind explaining
right.
that?
Absolutely. Well, I think, first of all, you know, we get so focused sometimes when bullying is happening on addressing the bullying instead of, you know, what is missing that this is that the bullying is happening. So looking at the underlying cause and, you know, the thing that we're talking about today is oftentimes those social skills are lacking, or that, you know, the cooperative environment is lacking. your question just went out of my head. Here's another
direct
moment.
Instruction versus
brought
modeling.
Bye. remind me what you just said. You were asking about
direct instruction versus modeling. No,
direct
it's totally
modeling.
Fine. We all have those moments.
Absolutely. So I think, you know, direct instruction is more about telling. And really, I think what we need is for parents to be showing, to be doing, to be engaging. And that's, I mean, you know, we've talked about the book, and I've got a lot of people asking, you know, why did you write this book for adults? Why didn't you write it for kids? And I said, well, you know, the adults need to be modeling play behavior for kids. because they're the ones who are often taking play away or, you know, undervaluing it. And so I think that adults need to show that they're, you know, that play is valuable and that cooperative play in particular is valuable. And so whether, again, the parent or teacher or other adult is engaging at it, you know, at home or at school or on the playground, whatever, I think that by showing that they're willing to engage in the play activities, that gives the kids permission and also gets them to join in more. So, again, I think modeling being part of as opposed to the direct instruction telling them about, you know, you guys should really play more together. You know, if you go do this, you can whatever, is, in my opinion, not as helpful. It's a good first step, but I think being more of an active model is a lot more effective and engaging.
Well, and the other thing I love about what you're saying about being an active model is that if a kid's attention isn't placed on how they are, and one of my favorite things that happens in my office is I'll ask a kid, do you have any idea what your mom means by this? And they'll say, I have no clue. and so we tell kids to do better or be nicer or be a better winner, be better, right, you know, when they lose. And often, you know, if you ask the kid, they'll say, I have no idea what the adults are talking about. And we just don't ask them very often, right? So
right.
I think what I like about the modeling that you're describing is that we're actively giving them
right,
a preview of what it is, you know, a little snapshot of what it is we want from them.
Absolutely. And, well, and I think the second part of that is, too, is that, you know, once you've engaged in this cooperative play and hopefully there's some success in it, is giving them specific feedback. I really liked how you and Johnny worked together on that problem. When you hit a barrier, you really talked it through. That showed really good cooperative skills and that you were really listening to Johnny. And then you also had some good suggestions. So you want to get really specific about the social skills that you're trying to reinforce when they are engaging in those positive behaviors after, you know, during and after play.
Wonderful, and that is so true. And we want to focus on the positive, catch them being good, and really show them this was the moment when you demonstrated what we're looking for.
Right.
Because, like I said, so many times when I ask kids, they'll tell me that they have no idea what we want.
Exactly.
But what I love about what you also said, that just to wrap things up, is you talked a lot about showing. Can you just say a couple more things about why you want to show the kid the play?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think that sometimes kids, especially as they get a little bit older, they get anxious about playing. And so they feel like, you know, especially if they've been involved in more competitive play, they don't want to be the loser. Whether you're the bully or you're being bullied, nobody wants to be the loser. They're afraid of looking silly in front of their peers, especially as they get older. There's, you know, you want to fit in, all these kinds of things. Not being sure about the rules, especially if it's a new game. And again, also not knowing what, if there's adults supervising, what they're looking for. You hear my dog groaning, so he doesn't know what I want from him right now. So by modeling, you kind of take away some of that fear from, you know, if you're willing to look silly and maybe make a mistake and just say, oh, well, and show that, you know, making a mistake or, you know, essentially failing sometimes is not a big deal. It's something that can be built on and, you know, you can get over it and keep on moving on in the name of playing, that you're allowing the kids to have less fear. You know, if an adult's willing to do this, then sure, go ahead. And again, if it's more cooperative, there's not a, you know, there's less anxiety about winning or losing, that it's going to be much more inviting for the kids to join in.
Great. So the message to everyone, I guess, is that we should all engage in some cooperative play. Thank you so much, Dr. Kirsten Milliken, for joining us. And that is our show. We will see you again next week.